Okay, I hope you had a good afternoon tea. This session, we're going to present the results of our inaugural Chief Risk Officer survey. This was organised by the Institute, and the target audience was CROs from APRA regulated institutions. As usual, we'll have plenty of time to address questions after the end of the presentation. It's now my pleasure to introduce Gloria Yu to the stage. Gloria is a director at Deloitte, and she's been in the industry for 15 years working in Australia, New Zealand and Asia Pacific. She does statutory traditional actuarial roles for general insurers based in the region, but she also does quite a lot in the ERM space, and she's led teams working on designing risk frameworks as well as reviewing the APRA RMF and ICAP reviews. Within the Institute, she's very active. She was a member of council between 2009 and 2014. She currently sits on the Institute's Risk Management Practice Committee, also the Audit and Risk Committee, and the Leadership Development Committee. She's also very heavily involved in mentoring, and I can't really tell you what she does in the rest of her very limited spare time, but without further ado, I'd like to welcome Gloria.
Thank you, Van, and good afternoon. So I have the pleasure of presenting to you the CRO survey results, the inaugural one. As Vern mentioned, I have a number of hats, so today I'll be speaking with my hat on as a member of the Risk Management Practice Committee, and the comments that I make are not representative of the views of my employer. So I'm sure you're all excited and looking forward to the results. So I'm going to go through today's a bit of background in terms of the why that the RMPC would conduct this survey, a bit about how we conducted the survey, and then go through a bird's eye view of the results. The results are very detailed, and we're going to provide those results to all those who have been invited to participate in the survey, but also make them publicly available in the Actuaries Institute website as well. So all of you can go and have a look at those in your spare time afterwards. So as mentioned before, this is the inaugural CRO survey. Very first time we looked at it, and it covers a lot of the themes that was touched on today in the seminar. It's a bit of a trial to see whether CROs and our members would value such an exercise. And because it's the first time we've done this survey, we are particularly keen to receive your feedback and your views on the things that we can do to improve this survey better, whether it's extra questions you might like to see or how frequently you might want us to conduct this survey going forward as well. So we set out to achieve a few objectives of this survey. One is to really understand how risk management practice works in each of those industries, and also to enable the CROs to do a bit of a benchmarking exercise across their peers. We also wanted to compare the risk management practice across the different industries as well. We are aware that there are existing surveys that look at a single industry, and there are also surveys that cover a much broader geographic coverage, including whether it's Asia Pacific or more globally as well. But our survey is very much focused on the Australian environment, so the Australian entities that are regulated by APRA. So that's the banks, the general insurers, life insurers, private health insurers as well. We have chosen to exclude superannuation because the regulation and governance of the super fund is quite different to those of the insurers and the banks, and it's unlikely, in our view, that the super funds will come under the CPS 220 in the near future. We also want to acknowledge that a fair portion of our members work outside Australia, particularly those who are on the webinar now. But our view is that for the inaugural survey, we'd like to focus on Australia in the first instance. So the way we carry out the survey was that we emailed all the CROs, which we have their contact details of in the APRA-regulated entities. Not all health insurers have CROs as yet, and so in those cases, we email the risk managers of the risk functions instead. And in some cases, we actually email the deputy CROs or the actuaries, who we expect them to be more responsive to the surveys as well. So we had 20 questions in total in the survey. We toyed around the number of questions to put in the survey, obviously balancing the detail understanding of the survey, but also making sure the survey is not overly long so as to discourage people from responding. For a few questions, we gave the respondents the option to select a no response. We had limited number of free text responses, and what that essentially means is we won't have verbatim comments on a lot of these results. So a lot of those will be us speculating on some of the observations from those results. The responses were anonymous, and there was one response allowed per person. And so if a particular person is a CRO of both a general insurer as well as a life insurer of a conglomerate financial services company, they would have the opportunity to respond to that questionnaire once. So onto the coverage of our survey. So this is looking at the coverage from a perspective of the number of entities, but also from the value of the net assets. You can see here that the coverage of each industry is clearly better by the value of net assets compared to that of the number of entities. But the key message here I'd like to bring out is that the overall coverage is pretty good. We can see here that the ADI coverage can definitely be improved, and that's something that we are keen to look at improving going forward as well. So that might be through partnering with another organisation who have good connections with the CROs in banks. So in the survey, we had a number of profile questions, things like what industry they work in, their specific roles, the size of the company, as well as the ownership structure. So I'm going to take you through those very briefly now. So we had 43 responses in total. Granted, the response set is pretty small, so it's difficult to draw very firm conclusions, and we haven't tested these results for statistical significance as such, but we can clearly see some clear observations even within this small sample size. If you look at the section, so you can see pretty much all these areas of the pie, over three quarters of them from insurance. And if we include the diversified financial services firms as well, so that's the conglomerate financial services of GI and Life, we're pretty much covering 84% of that, of the whole response set. We can see a strong representation from the PHI industry. Superannuation there could potentially be life insurance. And we're a little bit surprised why there's a water utility response, because we certainly didn't send it to any entities outside APRA-related industries. So that's a surprise, but I guess we'll never find out because it's anonymous. So to the roles of these respondents. So for ease of visualization, we've color-coded this table. The darker the color, the bigger the number. You can see most of the responses were from specialist risk managers or CROs. You can see that little box there that we've got. And the non-CRO responses come from a consultant acting as a CRO, other actuaries in lieu of CROs, and others who are not strictly bound by the CPS 220 at this stage, so the PHI industry. So onto the number of staff in the organisation. So this is looking at the number of staff in the entire organisation, not the number of staff in the risk management function. We will have a slide on the number of risk management staff later on as well. So you can see that the ADIs, life insurers and government insurers, tended to be larger. So you can see the darker coloured cells there, and PHI tends to be smaller than the other industries. to ownership structure. So we looked at a number of different ownership structure, whether it's public, private, mutual or government from an Australian perspective. We then looked at the foreign owned companies, whether they are branches or whether they are privately owned. Most of the PHIs are mutually owned, and it's consistent with them being smaller in size and also a bit of a by virtue of their history as well as medical defence organisations. The life insurers generally have a higher percentage of foreign ownership. Not surprising, as we know, quite a number of Japanese companies have purchased the Australian life insurers as well. For general insurers, you can see in the diagram there, it's pretty evenly spread across the various ownership structures. So that's a profile of the respondents. Now to a couple of key questions that we found interesting from the respondents. So we thought it would be really worthwhile to understand from the respondents what are the top three risks from their perspective in the next 12 months. So a very short time frame as such. The respondents did not have to number these top three. They just have to identify which are the top three risks. We gave them quite a lot of options to choose from. So other than the list here on the slide, we gave them options such as business interruption, failure to attract and retain good staff, inability to purchase reinsurance at acceptable prices, pressure on operational and resource capability, natural cats, and so on and so forth. So here we can see that the top one on the table is the regulatory change or legislative change. So the way to interpret this table is that 40% of all the respondents have indicated that regulatory change or legislative change is one of the top three risks in the upcoming 12 months from their perspective. And the key industry that's represented in this 40% of the respondents are PHI, banking and JI. I suppose PHI is not surprising because they are transitioning to CPS 220. From a banking perspective, obviously with the requirements that APRA has now come up with the unquestionably strong capital requirement, that's again not a surprising result. And from the general insurance community, that's possibly because of IFRS 17. Increased industry competition and lower profitability is another one. Cyber risk, economic downturn and recession. Not surprising to see GI there, particularly around the lender's mortgage insurance, which is very interlinked with the house prices and therefore economic slowdown as well. Failure to meet customer needs or to innovate, and also damage to brand and reputation. Again, not surprising to see life insurance and the banking there, highlighting these are the top three risks given the recent news articles. So on to risk culture. So a very dear topic that have been covered in a number of plenary sessions today. So we wanted to look at the way risk culture is assessed in their particular organisation. So you can see in this diagram that the surveys of all staff remain the most popular tool. You can also see that banks do complete some of those focused surveys and interviews, and a majority of the life insurance, banking and GI would use those more objective measures such as the number of compliance breaches. Very few of those use psychometric testing, independent reviews or peer assessments at the moment, although those are more popular amongst the foreign private-owned companies. So the next question we wanted to test with the respondents was how they rate the behaviours and attitudes towards risks in their organisation. So this question is intended to act as a proxy for risk awareness. Obviously, the interpretation is quite subjective because you will have some CROs who are judge themselves quite harshly, others might be sort of more bullish about this area. And on the whole, we can see, we look at those green bars, most of them think that the internal attitudes to risk are adequate, although obviously there's room for improvement. PHI is quite interesting. They have a small percentage with high scores, so it pretty much reflects the journey that they're on in terms of the risk management development. So they're still very early on in that, and they also have a big unsure category. So that's this section over there. Some possibly haven't yet made the assessment and they might be still getting up to speed with the CPS 220 requirements as well. So the next one is on the confidence that they have in terms of the ability for their organisation to respond to a serious business disruption. You can see that the banking and life insurance industries are most confident, so that's this bit there and that bit there, and GI and PHI are relatively less confident. You can't see this on this slide, but you can see it in the full results. Essentially, confidence in business resilience mostly increases with company size. That's not unexpected because they probably have a much greater number of staff so that they can divert those resources to look after the business interruption as and when those events happen. And highest confidence levels are found in foreign companies and government insurers. So we looked at what are their biggest challenges in carrying out their roles. So this is an open-ended response, so they can enter free text, whatever they feel like entering at that point in time, and we managed to summarise them into a key few categories as listed out here: embedding, strategic enabler, value add, and so on and so forth. We can clearly see that embedding risk management was a common theme in terms of their biggest challenges. Resourcing pressure was also rated quite highly in this case. Banking as a bit of an outlier, it's somewhat unexpected, but I suppose with only 4 respondents, it could be just a statistical variation, really. Making risk management a strategic enabler and also a source of value add was a key challenge that's faced by the CROs as well. In terms of the category other, that includes things like balancing between rigor and commerciality, taking timely action, identifying emerging risks, as well as taking risks for growth. So the next couple of slides, I want us to turn to 2 of the challenges that's highlighted. So that's embedding and also resource limitations as well. So looking at embedding, so how embedded is the risk management function within their organisation? Most of them said their embedding is reasonably mixed and there is room for improvement. Very few from GI and hardly any from PHI said embedding is comprehensive. The largest companies reported the best overall levels of embedding of risk management. Smaller companies reported around 20% for both comprehensive embedding and minimal embedding, so that's compliance only. Compliance-focused risk management is most prevalent in mutual and foreign private companies. So on to resourcing. So how large is the risk management function in their team? So the average number of staff within the risk management function is around 11. Banks have a reasonably bigger number of people in the function, around 23. Life is around the average, GI slightly less, and PHI only has about 3 staff, and that's understandable given that their organisation size is much smaller as well. Interestingly, one of the 5 respondents who had less than 20 staff reported that they have more than 15 risk management staff, so not sure why that's the case, unless they have potentially misinterpreted the question. But Australian companies that are publicly listed, mutuals or government-owned, they tended to have the largest teams in the risk management function. So turning to risk appetite statements, so I'm going to look through that in the next few slides. So key question is, how do they use the RAS in their organisation? So you can see in here that pretty much most of them use it for the corporate strategy. For GI and life, you can see that they use it for reinsurance as well. We also asked a question around how long is a RAS. On average, it's about 15 pages. There's no clear trend by size of company. Banking and PHI had a bit of a longer RAS, around 20 pages, and life had about 10 pages. We also noted that foreign-owned companies tended to use RAS for compliance purposes. They often take the RAS directly from the group, and so they operate within a very narrow and well-defined mandate. And again, that's not particularly surprising. So on to return and performance metrics. So what metrics do they use in the RAS? So you can see in the graph that the net profit after tax is the most popular return and performance measure. Interestingly, two of the four banking respondents indicated underwriting results is the metric they use. Maybe it's because they are coming from a bank assurer's perspective. Banks and GI tended to use the ROE, and the others, CROs, responded by saying that they've got a number of capital and operational measures, including things like claims ratio, rating agency rating, profit at risk, fraud levels, as well as health and safety. So that's their return and performance. We'll now turn and have a look at the capital and solvency metrics. So capital ratio from APRA is the most common. You can see GI and PHI make relatively more use of the APRA capital ratios, and banks, on the other hand, makes more use of the rating agency and probability of ruin. And about 20% of all the groups use economic capital. So over there. So how frequently do they compare their risk profile against their risk appetite and risk tolerance? So most of them review this quarterly. Three out of the four banking respondents review monthly. Over a third of the PHIs review more frequently than monthly. All the foreign branches who have responded in the survey actually indicated they review their risk profile on a quarterly basis. So that's pretty much all I have time to cover, I believe. I can see Vern nodding at me. I'm conscious that I've gone through these results reasonably quickly. Just to reiterate that the full report will be made available on the Actuaries Institute website, so you can go through those in details. But we're really interested to getting your views and feedback on any of those, whether they're surprises or whether you think we should be conducting this survey, you know, once a year, once every couple of years, and the like. And this survey is a bit of a baseline. It's always difficult as a first survey, but it will be interesting to see how the results change over time as well. So any questions or feedback, come see me, Vern, or Brett. So back over to Vern.
Thanks very much, Gloria. We have got 10 minutes aside now for questions. So I think there are some roving mics around. So we have the first question in the audience.
Anna Mipelitia from Littlewood. Why was it limited to one questionnaire per person? Because I didn't respond for the simple reason I look after four companies as risk officer, and I have a survey, and I didn't know to which company I was responding. I mean, they're quite different. I mean, I think it would be much better if I had received like four surveys and I could have filled it in for each one of them. I would have done it, but I can't respond. You know, which one name I'm going to pick.
Okay, I appreciate that feedback. Well, certainly, I guess we hadn't sort of envisaged such a outcome when we were designing the survey, but we'll certainly make sure that you'll get four opportunities next time.
We also thought that it would be simpler if we just sent one person just one survey rather than sending one person, you know, four different surveys. But if that makes it confusing, we'll certainly look into that going forward. Yeah.
It should not be focused on the person, it should be focused on the company.
Yeah, sure. Yep, noted.
Natasha Hall. Just a question and comment on the exclusion of superannuation. So I noted your comments at the beginning. I think in the future, it might be interesting to include superannuation. I think a lot of the questions could be answered by superannuation funds. A lot of them already have CROs, and others have executives that are responsible for risk, amongst other things. And I think as part of the APRA review of the prudential framework for superannuation that's going to be done over the next year or so, in terms of the framework that was implemented in 2013, they're going to look at potential alignment with CPS standards, and that will, I guess, follow the trend from PHI and CPS 220 being applied to PHIs from April next year, I think it is. So I think that might just be a way to further develop it, and I'll be interested to see it develop with more participants over time. I think it'll be really useful.
Yeah, sure. We'll certainly look into that as well. I think it is a good idea to sort of expand it further. But I guess as a first server, you've got to start somewhere, and so that's what we had. But we can include that going forward as well.
Absolutely. I think you know, as well as questions, you know, if people have got insights or burning questions or wondering what they would have loved to have seen today, well, let us know right now if you'd like, or alternatively, please do feed us back. More questions.
Catherine Helen, I'm a non-executive director. You mentioned who you sent the survey to. I'd be interested in knowing the background and the qualifications and the skills of the people who are occupying these roles.
Yeah, I mean, Brett, would you have any sort of comments on that? I think you sort of managed quite a lot of the database, didn't you? Would you? Any sort of high-level things that you could help Catherine with?
So I think the question's more about asking the respondents what their qualifications are and their experience. Is that right?
How are these functions being staffed?
Yeah. Okay.
An input or a guide to management and directors as to what sort of people and at what level are doing this work in organisations.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. It's certainly something we can consider for future. Yeah.
More questions? Getting late in the day, perhaps. Okay. Well, let's push on. Well, I'd just like to ask you to now join hands and thank Gloria for the presentation. And, I mean, I guess just a couple of thoughts I had. I was quite interested on the top three risks. In fact, Aon in their 2017 global survey, I think they had the top 10 risks, and the six that are listed there are in the same as the top six in the Aon survey, which is quite interesting. Just for your information, the top three from the Aon one was damage to brand. That was their most concern. Then followed by economic slowdown, and then increasing competition was their third one. So that's, I think it will be great to see this, see this in a year from now and sort of see what's on people's mind. Perhaps it could be nuclear war. Anyway. Moving on. So at this point, I'm going to do a handover now for the next session's speaker. There will be a 2-minute break after that when the new people come in. So it's now my pleasure to introduce Nolene Wolfe, who will be the chair for the next session. Nolene's the Chief Risk Officer for Allianz Australia, and that's a role she's had since 2011. Her responsibilities in this role include the design, implementation and maintenance of the Allianz risk management framework. She leads a team that provides quantitative advice to support the financial reporting, and components of that include capital management, reserving, reinsurance and cat modelling, so that's pretty detailed stuff. Before Allianz, Nolene was at PwC for 16 years, and I think the last 6 years as partner, and her specialist there was general insurance, actuarial and health insurance. She's a fellow of the Institute of Actuaries of Australia and a Bachelor of Economics from Macquarie University. So look forward to hearing from you next session. So we've got to change over now and in for the last lap after that. Thank you.